Case number 16-1015, Erie Boulevard Hydropower LP petitioner versus the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission. Mr. Levenbuch for the petitioner, Ms. Rylander for the respondent, Mr. Brody for the intervener.
Mr. Levenbuch, good morning.
Good morning. May it please the court, Ariel Levenbuch for the petitioner. I've asked to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. In our briefs, we've set forward a number of independent reasons why the orders on review can't stand. But today, subject to the court's questions, I'd just like to focus on the two most straightforward ones. First, the commission still does not acknowledge, let alone explain, its departure from its 2012 order, a final order that both granted credits to Erie and expressly rejected the district's attempts to later, quote, raise any legal or equitable ground for limiting the extent of such credits. Second, having disregarded its own final order in 2012, the commission then did precisely what its regulations and other prior orders forbid. It gave effect to a settlement that it had never approved. So turning to the first issue, in 2012, after a 3-year investigation, the commission retroactively determined Erie's headwater benefits liabilities to the penny. In paragraph 44 of its July 2012 order, the commission then held that, quote, to the extent that any downstream project owner made payments exceeding those amounts, those overpayments equitably should be offset against future charges.
When it determined that amount, was it by use of the general rule?
No, it was not. Well, yes, in 2012, it was by use of the general rule that it determined those obligations that are set forth in the 2012 order. Now, having set forth what those numbers are, in the paragraphs, in the 5 paragraphs following the one that I just quoted, which is paragraph 44, the commission then laid out exactly how those credits should be calculated. In paragraph 47, it even gave an example of how to do the very simple math equation that it ordered. Now, during the investigation that led to that order, the district had asked the commission to defer consideration of whether and how credits would be granted, and it purported to, quote, expressly reserve the right to raise any legal or equitable grounds for limiting the extent of such credits. But in paragraph 30 of the 2012 order, which you'll see at JA 409, in plain, unambiguous language, the commission expressly rejected that reservation. This is what it wrote. Quote, this determination, that is the determination of to whom credits were due and how they would be calculated, quote, must be made in the present order. That's paragraph 30 and the underlying text preceding it, and it could not be clearer. The commission
then
ordered,
we can't determine how much anybody owes until we go through this credit process, this calculation process. And then once we do that, it said in paragraph 45 that we need essentially, there needs to be a process now by the commission, which you seemed happy to go through, that said that because some companies may have already obtained refunds from the district through court action or other means. Isn't that leaving the door open for exactly what happened here?
It does not, Your Honor. You accurately quoted the order. It says, here is how you should calculate credit. So it makes 2 determinations. It says, one, all downstream project owners are entitled to credits. And two, it says, here's how you figure out what those credits are. And then it says specifically what the open information is. And the only piece of open information is, did you get refunds? Or was money that a downstream project owner already paid to the district, was that already returned? That's it. Now, to be clear, what we saw in July of 2012 came after a 6-month period where a preliminary draft had already been distributed to the parties. So the parties already knew what was coming in that order. And the district wrote a letter that you see at JA 428, and they said, please hold off. Please don't determine any of these things right now. We may want to raise some reason for limiting this besides the refund.
Yeah, but they also said, look, we don't. The amounts that have been paid, there's open information. The amounts that have been paid are not a matter of record in this case, in 45, and so that's why it said refunds or other, you know, legal actions or other means. I mean, it was leaving open the ability to inquire into whether there were reasons to change what these payments were. That there's already been things have happened. They don't know about it. They can't foreclose it, and so they're just leaving open the door to figure out. Fine, we did our math. Here's what it should have been. Now, what will equitably need to be done to adjust past payments has yet to be determined.
Okay, well, with respect, Your Honor, it is true that they left open what the numbers are in the simple math equation that they ordered. But
no, more than whether those, how those numbers should be enforced, because part of what those numbers are could be affected by whether there had already been prior litigation affecting those amounts.
Well, Your Honor, I don't think anyone disputes that there was no refund paid here and that there was no money that had been collected that was returned, which are the phrases that the Commission uses not once, but it uses them at least a half a dozen times, not only in the paragraphs from 44 to 49, but then the Commission actually orders the parties in the director's order, paragraph B. This is specifically the information that you need to exchange. And again, it goes to actual money that changed hand. It doesn't go to precisely what the district didn't raise, which is any other legal or equitable ground for changing the equation that was proposed.
But they're not changing the equation here. They're making a determination as to equitably what should happen given the prior settlement agreement. They're not saying that the amount of the credits changes. They're just saying you've already gotten the remedy you chose in this case.
Well, that may be what they've said, but I think our first issue is that is in conflict with what they said they were going to do in 2012, and they don't actually address the language that they use there. But I would say,
but to be clear, did they? Because this gets forgive me, I just got a little confused in the briefs. In 2012, is it your position that when they made these statements, they were fully aware that there had been this settlement agreement between Erie and the Commission? And what it entailed?
So I think the Commission has spoken out of both sides of the mouth with respect to what it was aware of. So,
I'll let them explain that. Please tell me your understanding.
It's my understanding that they were aware of it, as it had been pointed out to them in 2007. And, in fact, in the 2007 order, and this is the second point I was going to turn to, when the Commission said, we don't enforce private agreements with respect to Headwater benefits, they were talking about this specific agreement. So they absolutely had them in front of it in this proceeding. But I think the more important point as regards the 2012 order is if they didn't have it in front of them, it's because the district failed to raise it. The district could have raised it. They could have said, before this order goes final, we want you to consider this. They're not entitled to credit.
But to the extent you want to read the 2012 order as making a determination that settlement agreement is irrelevant, we'd have to know that they had that in mind specifically when they used the language that you're citing to us, would we not?
Well, I think our contention is if it's an order that made the prior settlement irrelevant, it was the 2007 order that did that.
Okay. Not the 2012 order.
Excuse me, correct. The 2012 order is the order that did two operative things. One, it granted credits to Erie, and the second thing is it put the district on notice. If you want to raise any basis for limiting these credits and the refund equation that we proposed, speak now or forever hold your peace. And the district didn't do that, and the Commission still hasn't addressed that. Maybe the Commission had some reason for belatedly letting them make this point, but since they haven't acknowledged that, they haven't given us this reason. But, Judge Millett, to go to your point, with respect to the Commission's actions that in saying that this order should not be relevant to this determination, again, I point this court to paragraph 35 of the 2007 order, which is at JA 835, and this is what they wrote. The Commission held that the very settlement at issue here, quote, was not submitted to the Commission for approval and does not reflect a Commission determination of the charges Erie should pay. And then it made clear in paragraph 53, which is at JA 839, that, quote, it is not for the Commission to enforce the representations made by the parties in settlement provisions it hasn't approved. Now, contrast that with what the Commission has said in this very court that it did in the orders that are on review. This is what it says on page 2 of its brief. They held that the 2006 settlement, quote, governed Erie's Headwater benefits liability for the years 2002 through 2008. You can't square those two things. In 2007, speaking about this very settlement, they said this does not reflect a determination of what you should pay.
Can I just ask you a kind of macro question?
Yeah, yes, please.
If the Commission were to order that the district had to give these offsetting credits, what remedy does the district have for losing its part of the bargain in the settlement agreement?
Well, I think that in the Commission determination granting those credits, the district may well have objected and said, you shouldn't grant these credits.
No, going forward, if you were to prevail,
yes,
what could the district do? Because at that point, the quid pro quo of the prior settlement agreement, they've lost the quid. And you guys still have all your benefits, including the reservoir operating agreement. So what's their remedy?
Well, Your Honor, there may not be a remedy, but the reality is when parties sleep on their rights, sometimes they're not satisfied with the outcome.
So, well, I don't think they would have slept on their rights because they wouldn't have lost their half of the consideration unless and until if this court were to say that they got it wrong. So I don't think they've slept on any rights.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, perhaps I misinterpreted your question. If this court remands and the commission makes a new determination with respect to credits, I think in that litigation there would be a dispute over, for example, collateral estoppel and whether the fact that the district's failure to appeal in 2007, the order that said the commission doesn't approve this, or its failure to appeal or even seek rehearing in 2012.
It wasn't injured by that decision back then. It wouldn't have been injured. It clearly hasn't been injured by the commission. The commission hasn't taken away the value of its settlement agreement up to this point now. Now, if your position is that the law requires the commission to take the quid away from that agreement. And so I'm just trying to figure out, is this so you guys get your cake and eat it too, you get all these credits and you still get to keep all your part of the bargain under the settlement agreement, or do you lose your bargain under the settlement agreement?
You know, it's not our contention that the entire settlement agreement, for instance, becomes void, because all we're talking about is the intersection of federal law with a certain part of the settlement agreement.
Not a certain part, it's the entire, it's what they got in that settlement agreement. Right, you guys got these benefits under this reservoir operating agreement and continue, if I'm correct, until 2021.
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, and so they're going to be bound by all that. But what you were supposed to give them, which was, we accept how much we've paid, we will not litigate it, we will not dispute it, you get to keep the $7 million difference that you're fighting around here, you get to keep that. It's gone.
Yes, Your Honor, that is the outcome here. But again, I would point the court to what happened in 2007. In 2006, not months after this agreement was signed, Erie intervened in this proceeding. Erie intervened in Albany's action to seek a declaration that federal law preempted state law. And it was in the course of that intervention that the district said, No, 2006 settlement, you guys made an agreement, you wouldn't challenge any of these assessments, and the commission ruled in our favor and said, no, federal law trumps, we did not approve this agreement, so it's not binding on actions before, and they didn't appeal that.
As to prospectivity, but at that point you had a final, closed, unappealed state court judgment adopting that settlement agreement, making it a final, unappealed order of a court. You guys had never appealed and never challenged. And I think there's precedent from this court that says whatever preemption there might be that applies prospectively doesn't go back and unravel final closed state court judgments.
Right. But
so they wouldn't have been on notice to challenge anything.
I think my point is a more limited one. In the Albany proceeding, there were two different issues going on in front of the commission. The first one is Albany's argument with respect to preemption, but the second was, among other things, the district objected to Erie participating in this, and the commission dealt with both of those at the same time. And the commission made a determination that Erie was entitled to be before the commission with respect to Headwater benefits assessments, not only going forward, but Headwater benefits assessments beginning with when the license was issued. Now, again,
well, can you make clear, because I couldn't find in the record what you all were actually arguing in the Albany proceeding. Were you specifically arguing that Albany's right and that undoes our final closed, unappealed settlement agreement? Were you making the argument that we're now hearing?
No, I don't believe we affirmatively made that argument. I think we intervened to be a party to the proceeding with respect to whatever commission determinations were
sure,
there.
But so what did you argue should be the outcome as to what did Erie argue that the outcome should be as to it given that the settlement agreement? What notice did you give the district?
Yeah, and I'm sorry, Your Honor, I may not recall correctly, so I don't want to misspeak. If I recall correctly, we didn't make any affirmative representations with respect to the settlements. This came up with the shoe on the opposite foot. The district invoked the settlements and said, you have no business being here at all because your assessments have already been set by this agreement. And it was in the context of rejecting that assertion by the district that the commission made the ruling and the language that I've quoted. And again, it was the district's failure to appeal that. Because remember, we're not just now talking about the order. We're talking about a regulation. The regulation says...
Is it possible for you all to provide us with a copy of what you all submitted in the Albany case?
Absolutely. If it's not in the record right now, we could certainly go...
Or if it is, I missed it.
Record.
Thanks.
All right. We'll give you a couple of minutes to reply.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Ms. Rylander?
Good morning. May it please the Court, Elizabeth Rylander for the Commission. The heart of Erie's case here seems to be that its expectations in 2012 were not satisfied in 2015. But as the Court seems to have discerned correctly, Erie and the District settled the issue of payments for the early years in which FERC had jurisdiction over the dam and the lake by signing a settlement and getting it approved by a state court judge in 2006. That settlement broadly released any claims Erie might have in the future, and FERC reasonably held the parties to the bargain they struck in that settlement.
How do you get around their argument that you had no business giving any legal relevance to that settlement agreement, given that it wasn't approved by the Commission?
The settlement didn't have to be approved, Your Honor, because it was not a settlement made before FERC. This settlement was made in state court. It settled issues of state law. It resolved state litigation. And it was submitted to FERC merely as in response to FERC's inquiry as to what money had changed hands. So in 2012, when FERC was examining who had paid money to the district to satisfy state law headwater benefits assessments, this piece of evidence came to FERC to say that for these years 2002 to 2009, Erie and the district had a prior agreement and that both parties were already performing.
Well, by the time of this decision, the Commission isn't just saying that's interesting. The Commission is saying the existence of that settlement has such consequence in our decision making that we are going to enforce it as the equitable resolution of this case. How does that intersect with your Regulation 602?
With Regulation 602, Your Honor? Mm-hmm. Rule 602 does not actually apply in this case because Rule 602 applies to settlements that are made before the Commission. Had the parties reached a settlement before the Commission in response to the remand orders in 2009, or had the parties reached a settlement before the Commission when asked to individually contact the district and establish who had paid what to whom, that might have fallen under Rule 602. But this 2006 settlement was made, again, in state court before a state judge, and it was not anything that FERC ever passed
on. The Commission said in 2007, you heard them quote, it's not for the Commission to enforce the representations made by parties in settlement provisions over which the Commission has no authority. But isn't that effectively what the Commission did here, was give effect to and an imprimatur to and legal consequence to that settlement agreement?
The FERC respected the bargain that was made. Erie's counsel represents that FERC has admitted something in paragraph 35, but paragraph 35 just explains the result. Paragraph 35 of that 2007 order. Paragraph 35 just explains that the 2006 settlement resolved state law issues and doesn't speak to what FERC's responsibilities are or to what FERC ended up doing in the future under Section 10F of the Federal Power Act.
Well, but you do say it doesn't reflect a Commission determination of what Erie should be paying, right?
No, it doesn't. It does not reflect a Commission determination of the charges that Erie should pay under Section 10F, which is a whole different analysis than what the state charged Erie under its own law. The New York's Environmental Conservation Law and the Federal Power Act say completely different things. So FERC acknowledged in this paragraph that the parties had settled this issue under the Environmental Conservation Law, but it did not settle or even begin to address what the Federal Power Act analysis might produce. And in fact, the Federal Power Act analysis did produce very different numbers, or we wouldn't all be here today.
You just said it didn't determine the numbers, and then the numbers were very different. So can you clarify that?
Of course, Your Honor. So the 2006 settlement resolved, there are two statutes at work here. New York's Environmental Conservation Law, under which the district charged Headwater benefits under state law for many years, and that's Federal Power Act Section 10F. Following this court's decision in Albany Engineering, Federal Power Act Section 10F became the only applicable authority under which Headwater benefits assessments could be made. However, this prior settlement had spoken to the issue of, you know, had spoken to Headwater benefits, but not as FERC is required to administer its own statute. The 2006 settlement speaks to Headwater benefits as the state of New York was administering its own statute prior to this court's preemption finding. So they're really not the same. They're not the same thing. It is possible, and I think petitioner's briefs reflect some confusion on this fact, it is possible for parties to resolve the issue of Headwater benefits under Section 10F by settlement. That's in FERC's regs section 11.14.
That would have been subject to Rule 602.
That would be subject to Rule 602,
okay,
yes.
That's not what happened.
That is not what happened here. It could have happened following this court's preemption finding, but it did not happen.
All right, but what I thought I heard you say was that the commission didn't determine what would be due under, say, the general rule.
Oh, yes, Your Honor, the commission did determine that.
Okay, and then decided not to require the parties to implement that.
What the commission did, the commission's orders on review here are titled Orders Calculating Dates. So what the commission did was it determined every downstream beneficiary's liability for Headwater benefits under Section 10F, and then it established the date on which prior payments to the district would fully offset the federal benefits going forward, at what point the downstream beneficiaries did not already have credit, as it were, with the district. Erie Boulevard's case is different because Erie Boulevard went to state court, as did Albany Engineering. Erie Boulevard signed a settlement that, in exchange for valuable compensation, some of which is at issue in this case, some of which is not, fully resolved the issues of state law headwater benefits for those years. And as Judge Millett pointed out earlier in this argument, there is established a package. A bargain for exchange, and FERC saw fit not to disturb that both in view of equity and in view
of
obligation.
So it determined what the federal rule would have required if applied, and then decided as a matter of equity not to apply. To say because the parties have entered into this settlement, we'll just stand by and let that govern.
Your Honor, I would disagree somewhat with the idea that FERC didn't apply the federal rule. Section 10F requires FERC to establish headwater benefits calculation, headwater benefits assessments, and FERC did that.
And what was that number roughly?
Excuse me?
What was that number roughly?
For Erie, I believe it was $1.8 million.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Determined that and then did not require a credit to that extent.
Correct. When FERC looked at who had paid what money to whom, it looked at Albany Engineering and said Albany Engineering has gone to state court, received a judgment, it's received refunds, Albany Engineering is done. It looked at other downstream beneficiaries and said they went to state court and they were unsuccessful, we can apply the offset here. With Erie, FERC looked and said, oh, there's a settlement there. They've resolved this themselves. They've gone to state court, they've made a deal. And it is not our place to upset that deal by changing it retrospectively.
So as you read the Albany Engineering decision of this court, the FERC has no affirmative obligation to make sure that downstream parties are not overburdened relative to the standard in 10F.
By overburdened, FERC is obligated to make sure that the payments under Section 10, that the assessments under Section 10F are fair. And FERC took on, in this case, the obligation to ensure that the resolution of the dueling payments between state and federal law were equitable. And in this case, FERC determined that what was equitable was that was to hold Erie Boulevard to the benefit of to the bargain it struck in 2006.
Suppose there had been no bargain and no one made any overture to the commission. But it came to your attention that Erie had probably overpaid relative to the federal standard. Mm-hmm. Is there any case in which the commission has proceeded and opened a matter without a complaint?
I'm not aware of any, Your Honor.
All right.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Mr. Brody?
May it please the Court. Frederick Brody of the New York State Attorney General's Office for the Regulating District. Let me address first Justice Ginsburg's line of questioning. Erie's appeal conflates two successive events in the Headwater benefits process. First is the calculation of Headwater benefits charges. FERC's regulations provide detailed instructions on how to do that. In this appeal, nobody disputes the calculation of Headwater benefits charges. The dispute arises at the next stage. FERC had to make an equitable ruling on whether to apply individual credits and defenses against those charges. In doing so, FERC exercised its equitable discretion to take into account Erie's settlement from 2006. Now, to stress, FERC made an equitable determination. Among other things, it did not credit prior payments up to, or rather, it credited prior payments up to the Section 10F amount, so that Erie would not make a double payment of the 10F benefits. But then it gave effect equitably to the rest of the settlement. The district, to address a question of Judge Millett's and Mr. Lavenbach's answer, did not sleep on its rights. In October 2012, Erie attacked payments under the settlement as unauthorized and demanded more than $9 million in credits. That's 358 to 359 of the Joint Appendix. In response, the very next month, November 2012, the district filed the settlement with FERC and asked FERC to consider it when determining Erie's claims. That's 347 to 348. Of the Joint Appendix. And the district again raised the settlement as a defense in 2014 and asked FERC to determine its effect. That's at page 290 of the Joint Appendix. Now, why didn't we raise it earlier? Because again, and this goes back to my first point, there was a Headwater benefits investigation going on. And the investigation determines physical facts. Were there benefits? How big were they? And this was conducted by Oak Ridge National Laboratory. What we're talking about here is a legal defense, the payment, an equitable offset that is not within the province of Oak Ridge National Laboratory or the commission doing its mathematical calculation under Section 1111 of FERC's rules.
What do I do about the fact that, as I read the statute, FERC's discretion to exercise equity is in determining the amounts for interest, maintenance, and depreciation? The equity is tied to calculations of those amounts. And the equity here that was exercised, I think admitted by all, way overshot by seven-ish million dollars, costs for interest, maintenance, and depreciation.
Well, no, Your Honor, I respectfully disagree. What was enforced here, again, was a deal of the parties, as Your Honor perceives, that where there was valuable consideration in the form of an extremely valuable extension of a flow agreement where the district was required to regulate the flow of the river in a way that benefited Erie financially. The district has been performing that. It's performing it now, at this moment. It's been performing it since 2006.
What would happen if they were right, if their argument were to prevail? What is your view of what happens to your obligations under the settlement agreement to perform your half of it?
What happens is, Mr. Lavenbach said we would lose it. Mm-hmm. We would lose that consideration that we had given over to Erie by regulating.
So does the settlement agreement survive without that consideration?
Well, the release survives because there is a severability clause in the settlement. And the settlement says that even if you find...
So you're admitting here that if they win, they get their cake and eat it, too.
They get what?
They get their cake and eat it, too. They get their credits, and they get all their benefits under the settlement agreement?
Well...
I don't know why your argument wouldn't be without consideration. The whole contract, including the severability clause, fails.
What I wanted to point out is that Mr. Ladenbrook's result is inequitable. So it would fly in the face of 10F.
Well, it might be inequitable in a broader Black's Law Dictionary sense of that term, but whether it's inequitable under the statute, which seems to tie equity to those particular types of payments, is a harder question.
And secondly, if Erie is successful in striking down part of the settlement, there's still a release. It releases all claims, demands, causes of action of any sort or effect. So the fact is that Erie has gained a right, but in 2006, in a negotiated deal represented by able counsel, they gave up the right to enforce that right.
No, I get that, but what I'm saying is if they're right in this litigation, they did get to continue to challenge that amount, and then they say they would get the $7-ish million in credits, and if that were to happen...
If that were to happen, it would be a disaster for the district.
Would you consider yourself bound by the settlement agreement to give them their benefits?
We are performing the agreement. We have performed the agreement. We believe the agreement should be upheld. But if Your Honor severs it and strikes down part of it, the release still remains. So this court shouldn't give Erie relief because it's released all its claims.
Mr. Brody, following up on something Judge Millett said just a moment ago, where did the commission, as far as you can tell, invoke this equitable power as an alternative to, rather than within the calculation of the general rule?
As an alternative?
Well, you said pardon me. Judge Millett suggested the equitable power was in the calculation, in determining what was the bottom line of the general rule. I think that's correct. Is that your suggestion?
No, it was just whether they should give them the credits, I thought was how they were using equity. The calculation number, I don't mean to speak for you guys, was set, no one disputes the one-ish million, 1.6 or 8 million. And it's just whether they're entitled to the credits. And that was the equitable determination. That's my question, but I'm sorry if I misspoke.
I'll direct this to the petitioners.
Let me just go back to Section 10F, which says that the licensee shall reimburse the owner for such part of the annual charges for interest, maintenance, and depreciation thereon as the commission may deem equitable. So when you do equity, you take into account all of the facts and circumstances. And one of the facts and circumstances is this release, and one of the facts and circumstances is this agreement. So the commission certainly was reasonable in construing its jurisdiction under Section 10F of the Federal Power Act to enable it to do equity in this case. And certainly the release, as a matter of law, not equity, bars what Erie is doing in this very court. They're coming in and trying to enforce a claim, a demand, a cause of action of any type, and they should not be allowed to do that because they have released that right back in 2006.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Does Mr. Ladenbrook have any time left? Okay, why don't you take 2 minutes?
Thank you, Judge Jensen. I'm going to keep this very brief. 2 points. The first one is I think it's incredibly important to focus on what the agency said it did below. We've heard assertions today that what the agency was doing was some sort of remedial, equitable exercise of power. That is not at all what they said below. It's not even what they said in their briefs.
Point us to what they did say. Then.
Okay, what they did say. So if we look at paragraph 11 of the August 2015 order, which is JA 216, I'm just, for brevity, I'm going to try and read them into the record, and then I'll explain them. Paragraphs 11.
Is that the rehearing or the initial one?
So in the initial order, paragraphs 11 and 19 to 20, the commission recites what the district was asking them to do, which was to determine that there was no overpayment. So the logic is not you're entitled to credits, but we're not going to give them to you. But rather, what the district said was, no, there are no credits because there was no overpayment. And there was no overpayment because the 2006 settlement established by agreement Erie's payments to the district.
It's reasonable. So, I'm sorry, go ahead.
You were going to read something or point something?
Oh, I did. I'm sorry. It's paragraph 11 of the 2015 order, which is a JA-216.
Right.
Okay? The commission is reciting what the district is asking them to do, which is determine that no credits are due, not because you shouldn't give them to them out of some equity, but rather because there was simply no overpayment in the first place, because the correct amount was paid, because, quote, the 2006 settlement established.
Are you attributing anything in paragraph 11 to the commission? Or is it, as I read it, the commission is reciting the district's point.
Yes, it is, Your Honor. And the reason I point that out is because when we see on page 2 of the commission's brief here what they say, which is that they determined that, quote, the settlement governed Erie's headwater benefits liability for the years 2002 to 2008, when they say that on page 2 of their brief here, they are making clear that what they've done is adopt the argument that was put forward by the district. Now,
I'm sorry. I just wanted to get to paragraph 19. They say, under these circumstances, it's reasonable and equitable to hold Erie Boulevard into the district to the bargain they struck regarding these payments. Is that not an exercise of equity?
Well, it is not an exercise of equity for the following two reasons, and this is what I want to make clear. It is not as though they have determined there was a violation of Section 10F and are exercising some remedial power. They say everywhere in the orders below and in their briefs that they don't believe there was a violation. So what they say they're doing is they're exercising their equitable rights under 10F, which says that they can determine headwater benefits assessments as they deem equitable. But that is itself subject to two very important restrictions. The first one is, even in the exercise of equity, they can only order payments that deal with interest, maintenance, and depreciation. But the second, and I think this is the key one here, is that they have a regulation that says how they carry out their equitable task. That's 18 CFR 11.11. So it is not as though the commission gets to say, well, our general rule would give us the number we give in 2012, but we've decided to disregard it. That's not how it works. They don't get to disregard the regulation simply because they don't like it. That's reinforced then by what we saw in the 2007 order. Now,
what again is it in 11.11 that they should have done?
It's not so much what they should have done, because they did do it. In 2012, they gave us the results of the general rule. What they should have done is follow through with the general rule and not at a later proceeding then adopt the settlement that they hadn't approved, which they concede they could not have approved.
If the day before the commission came down with its calculation on how much y'all actually owed, the $1.6 or $8 million, the day before, you and the district entered into a settlement and said, we don't care what FERC's going to do, we need to move on, and we'd really got this really great deal we'd love to get from you, this reservoir operating agreement with the flow that's going to help us. So as between you and us, here's what we agree to pay. The $9-ish million that you actually agreed to pay in the settlement agreement, and we're done. We're not going to deal with anything FERC says. We're done. Would that have been enforceable? Or would you still have been the next day be able to go, FERC said we only owe one?
I think it raises a difficult question that's not an issue here for the following reason. Under these circumstances, FERC would have known that what they were being asked to approve was a settlement.
No, you're not asking them to approve it. You two just as here you do a private settlement agreement, you're not submitting it to FERC.
Okay.
It's just you're agreeing that whatever decision FERC comes down with tomorrow, we're ignoring it.
Yeah, I
don't
think...
Would that be a valid settlement, or would you be able to get out of it the next day?
I do not believe that would be a valid settlement as regards issues within the exclusive jurisdiction of the commission. I think that rule of law you see applied in other areas of law where you have a federal government approval required for parties to reach a settlement. Now, there are aspects of this agreement...
Where does the federal law, as opposed from the rules, if you're talking about the rule, or where does a federal statute say that parties can't resolve past liability? I'm not talking about prospective liability. I'm only talking about past liabilities. Can't resolve that privately in a situation like this and just avoid all this agency litigation as well as court litigation.
In this situation, the relevant part of the statute is the part that said the commission shall determine. And as I think Judge Brown pointed out in her concurrence in Albany Engineering, it is a little odd that the regulations allow the parties to reach private settlements.
So your position that your settlement agreement was just void ab initio, you just couldn't have it. You can't have that consideration.
No, that is not our position. As I think I mentioned, our position is the settlement agreement is binding on the parties within the scope that it can be binding on them, which is to say with regards to all things that don't happen in front of the commission. So Judge Millett had asked me or had asked one of my colleagues whether or not there was any consideration on the other side if we prevail here. Well, I mean, there certainly was. We could not go to state court to seek relief as, for example, Albany Engineering did. And while I recognize I am not suggesting that that consideration might be equivalent to what we received, my point is the agreement is not void, and it is not as though there was no consideration received on the other side. Now, the outcome that we have here, I think, should not have been any surprise to the district because the commission had long told them, even before we signed this agreement, we are not going to enforce agreements on Headwater benefits that you don't submit to us for approval. They said that in 2003. They said it in 6 and in 7 and in 9 and in 12. They couldn't have been surprised, and they had numerous opportunities to appeal that determination, and they didn't do, though. They didn't do that, and I think that's the reason now that they're unhappy with the result that would follow if the commission is held to its regulations and past orders, which is what we would ask.
In the proceeding before the commission, in which a settlement agreement is submitted under 602 for approval, and approval is forthcoming, are there then possible later opportunities for the commission to enforce that agreement? The agreement's been approved, one party comes in and says the other's not living up to it. The commission can enforce that, right?
Correct. It is my understanding that when that happened,
not submitted in a proceeding before the commission, an agreement resolving state litigation, and the commission's not in a position to enforce that agreement, is it?
It's not, in fact,
of the agreement that's not their province to enforce it.
That is exactly right, and that's not me speaking.
So
that's the commission speaking.
You just said the commission was enforcing this agreement after saying they wouldn't, but they're not enforcing it. They're simply deferring to it as an equitable matter.
Well,
it
when I said they're
enforcing the state of New York to enforce the agreement.
Sorry, Aaron, my only point was when I said they're enforcing it after they said they wouldn't, with respect to this very agreement, they said they were not going to enforce this agreement.
And they're not enforcing it.
Well,
if there's a violation of the agreement, there isn't a violation, and if there were, they wouldn't be enforcing it. As you just said, it would be up to the state for it.
Well, I certainly agree that there hasn't been a violation of the agreement. I think that they think they were giving legal effect to it. I think they were doing so wrongly, but even under their own understanding of what they were doing, I think that would be inconsistent with their regulations and prior orders.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All of us. Thank you.